I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. It is it's Thursday. Next hour, we will have Stone Clinton in with Americans for Prosperity, see what they're up to. You know, we're actually heating up going into an election year legislature here in the state of Mississippi. So Americans for Prosperity has already taken a look at what they're going to focus in on next year that will benefit Mississippians economically. So we will talk to Stone Clinton about what they are up to, as we do on most Thursdays here. Before we get to that, I've got a lot to do. Some of it kind of philosophical, as opposed to being news-driven. So we'll get into that, and we're going to take a look in just a second at what is basically just an economy watch here on the show. So we'll do that in a moment as well. Quotes of the day today. This is a very interesting one to me historically, because this quote comes from Henry Adams, and he died in 1918. He was born in 1838 and died in 1918. So when you think about that, how long ago that was, to think about this quote, realize maybe nothing's really changed over hundreds of years. As much as we think that something is new, it is not. Henry Adams said this. He said, "The press is the hired agent of a moneyed system, and set up for no other purpose than to tell lies where their interests are involved. One can trust nobody and nothing." The press is the hired agent of a moneyed system and set up for no other purpose than to tell lies where their interests are involved. One can trust nobody and nothing. I thought that was fairly interesting. We realize the corporate capture. We've had a mainstream media here, all the way down to including all the radio stations, all the WGOP talk radio stations that WYAB competes with, that were lockstep taking money and telling you to go out and get the jab. This does not even include the financial incentives to all kinds of major media, including those GOP radio stations that take a lot of money from state agencies, get a lot of political spending if they carry water for incumbent candidates when it comes to races. But the press as it is, it's not new, apparently. It's been corrupt since basically its inception. I mean, the guy was born in 1838. I don't know what year he made this pronouncement, but if in the 1800s the press, you know, I feel like the United States at some point had a free press. I know it was certainly more confrontational in places like the White House. The mainstream media now is just nothing but a mouthpiece for the White House and has been for decades. I know a lot of people see it, particularly during the Biden administration, but when it comes to things like foreign policy and these, I mean, they've ginned up these wars. They try to talk up our economy and tell us everything's just absolutely fine. They tell us things like America has the greatest healthcare system in the world when we really don't, but they're supported by pharmaceutical companies. So anyway, apparently the mainstream media in this country has been corrupt and sold out for quite a period of time. Let me pull this up real quick. I thought this was interesting, and this was actually sent out by radio strongman Kim Wade. I thought it was a good quote of the day. This is from Leo Tolstoy. He said, "People try to do all sorts of clever and difficult things to improve life instead of doing the simplest, easiest thing, refusing to participate in activities that make life bad." People try to do all sorts of clever and difficult things to improve life instead of doing the simplest, easiest thing, refusing to participate in activities that make life bad. I think I've kind of embraced this philosophy in my life. I enjoy, and I think what makes life good is fighting abusive power. What makes me feel bad and what I think makes life bad is arguing and fighting with my fellow human beings, all being subjected to these things. What makes me feel good, what makes life good, is being healthy, turning my back on the medical system and taking my health into my own hands. What makes life bad is chronically being ill and tired and sickly. So I think that's absolutely fantastic advice. It's interesting. I can imagine everybody would interpret that quote quite differently. Most people through a partisan lens, I would imagine. But anyway, something to think about. Just refusing to participate in things that make life bad. Watching the economy right now, I ran across a quote. I told you yesterday that on Monday, the financial system in Great Britain was apparently about at the verge of collapse. This is happening in the debt markets. As I keep saying, the bond market is so important. They seem to have bought us a little bit of time. With that, the UK, the Bank of England, over there printing up a bunch of money and just bailing out the bond market. This is what they do. It's just that it's not going to work for very long this time, I don't think. Really, they've bought about this real money printing in response to the financial crisis, which was a debt crisis, which we tried to solve with anyone, more debt, dramatically more debt. Spoiler alert, that's not going to work. But they've bought us, you know, well over a decade now by printing up money. I believe the effects of this intervention by the Bank of England to just print up a bunch of money and try to bail out their bond market will fail, and it will fail faster. It's almost like maybe insulin for a diabetic. If you're in pre-diabetes or you're just diagnosed with diabetes, but it's not too bad yet. You have to take a little bit of insulin, but as you don't address the root cause of the diabetes, it continues to get worse and you require more and more insulin. That same dose doesn't work as well. So you need more insulin, and then your body continues to break down because, again, you're not addressing the core reason for the diabetes, which is, for type 2 diabetics, largely lifestyle-based. You need more insulin. That little bit just doesn't work. It doesn't work for any period of time. And this is the same thing we've got now. We've got this cure, but we need more and more of it, and it doesn't last as long. And so the Bank of England, they bought a little bit of time. We'll see if that is numbered in days, weeks, or months. But the U.S. markets cheered yesterday that a crisis was averted, and the markets rallied yesterday. But as of today, the Dow is down about 600 points, and the NASDAQ is off over 3% right now because I guess the markets realized that while crisis was averted for a day, nothing has actually changed. This is what a U.K. trader said. Says something broke. Quote, at some point this morning, he's talking about Monday morning, at some point this morning, I was worried this was the beginning of the end, unquote. He went on to say, if there was no intervention today, gilt yields, and that's the British bond, if there was no intervention today, gilt yields could have gone up to 7 to 8% from 4.5% this morning. And in that situation, around 90% of UK pension funds would have run out of, and then I ran into a paywall. I'm just going to say money. 90% of UK pension funds would have run out of, I don't know, money, time, out of the offices to avoid the hordes of pensioners that were about to be defaulted upon. I don't know exactly. I'm not going to pay. That's quite a cliffhanger. 90% of UK pension funds would have run out of. But, you know, the way I looked at it, I thought, well, you know, I don't think we even really need to know. If we know that 90% of UK pension funds were at the verge of something pretty bad, that's enough to get the point across there. So crisis averted for a day or two. But this is the world we're living in right now and the fragility of this economy that they tell us keeps booming. Searches for, here in the United States,
Maybe this is national, but United States, I would imagine, drives this number the most. Searches for, quote, real estate market crash, highest in internet history. Another milestone for the extremely confused elderly senior citizen in the White House basement. Analysis of Google Trends data reveals that searches for real estate market crash exploded 284% in the United States as of September 2022, the highest level in Google Trends history. And people are right to make this search, particularly in light of the fact that I played the clip on Monday of a trade expert in Dubai who said that he anticipates that the 10-year bond, which is the kind of the benchmark for what mortgage rates are set by, and mortgage rates are always several percentage points higher than the 10-year, obviously, for banks to get a rate for taking a risk on a mortgage. He said that 10-year rates would be up around 11.5% by the middle part of next year, within the next 9 to 10 months. So you can only imagine, what does the U.S. real estate market look like with 17-18% mortgages? Many of the people listening to me after my show for the past few weeks might have actually done a search for a real estate market crash. This is going to get ugly. My question is, and I'm going to take a quick break and come back. My question is, do we deserve this? Is this karma coming to the United States? Now, I'll explain that when I come back. And for all of you who think I'm some kind of an America hater, I'll explain why I'm not. I love my country. I loathe my government. But I got to tell you, I don't know, I got to thinking, as I said, some of today's show will be a tad bit philosophical. I kind of got to thinking, are we getting really what we deserve? We'll take a look at that when we come back. Stick around. I scrolled down. I was looking at the story about searches, internet searches for real estate crash on Google, which has reached all-time records. So this is including the 2008 housing crisis. I was scrolled down and started. I wanted to just see what the comments were about this particular story. I'm killing a little time for during a commercial break of our great advertisers. Comment was written under this story that said, would love to see this market crash, and they're referring to the real estate market. At the top of the many important steps required to build a future for a family is procuring a home. Young people have been priced into the streets or mom's basement. And that's my belief as well. I know everybody has really enjoyed watching their home equity go up. They've been very excited by this. They've never tied it to the money printing and manipulated things. And really, then we look at young people who are disaffected and calling for socialism, other bad ideas. We don't understand them. We just say that they're lazy. And I'll show you that attitude as a response to that comment about they'd love to see a market crash because we need to bring this back down where our kids can afford a home. Somebody replied, typical attitude of one who doesn't own real estate. Pull up your big boy pants and work harder or smarter, period. Now, this comment went on to the original poster said, no, I actually own a farm. But that's kind of the attitude of a lot of people when they look at younger generations. They just automatically see all of them as lazy if they complain about the way the system is right now. You just need to work harder. It's because most people don't understand economics and what's been done to these generations at the hands of the baby boomers and my generation, Generation X. But we will see some level of a housing crash here in central Mississippi. You know, we don't typically see the booms. I remember in 2008, I really expected much more of a downturn in central Mississippi real estate, but I made this mistake as being kind of new to investigating real estate. I was taking what was, I was looking at what was taking place in California and Las Vegas and Phoenix, and I was extrapolating it here. Not really paying attention to the fact that we weren't having these dramatic rises in real estate values here like they were having there, but I was expecting a similar crash. That was obviously flawed thinking. We did have a bit of a downturn. There were some foreclosures. There were some builders that went out of business. But it was nothing like what we saw, real estate crashes. This time around, though, I got to tell you, I don't know. But I certainly spoke to a lot of people who talked about listing their house and having three offers by the end of the day, settling it at about 20% more than asking price for about the last year or so. That feels bubbly to me. I know people who were putting in offers on houses and they couldn't compete. They put in a full price asking offer on the day that the listing hit the market and were outbid immediately. And they started having to up their bids to go always over asking. And obviously the asking prices were going up as well. Feels a little bubblicious here, even in central Mississippi. So we may see a downturn. But what I believe is coming financially is no secret. I believe we're in some trouble. Is this karma? I don't know how unpopular this segment will be, this idea, this thought experiment, that I'm being somehow anti-American or, you know, I don't know exactly how it will be taken. I think a lot of people don't ever like to really self-reflect on what our country has become at the governmental level. Every day that I interact with ordinary people is 95% of the time a good experience. Just people going on about their lives. Everybody gets along fine. We can be kind to each other. We can help each other. It's just, you know, there's just a million stories every single day of people who step up for each other. But as far as a country, and what we've represented around the world for really about 70 years now, do we deserve an economic crash and potentially a war as this bumbling idiot in the White House allows the people behind him, who we do not know who they are, you know, when they come out and Biden says something and then the White House clarifies what he says. The White House comes out and says, well, Joe Biden said this. The White House is refuting. The White House is walking back the president's statements. Who is the White House then, if it is not Joe Biden? So we don't know who's running the country. But as we are brought to the brink of potentially nuclear war, do we deserve a war as well? But on the financial side, do we not deserve a massive crash? And I'm not even talking about just the fact we are going to pay the price for deciding to go down the path of a debt-based society instead of one based on savings and production. Is this karma? I looked up the definition of karma. This was this kind of the simplest one. It's actually kind of a complex concept, particularly in Hinduism and Buddhism. But this was short and succinct. Karma is the fundamental causal law by which good or bad acts defy the... Karma is the fundamental causal law by which good or bad acts decide the future modes of an individual's life. Can karma be countrywide? Is America about to suffer the karma of the way we have behaved on the world stage? And yes, in Republican and Democrat administrations, there's only been those two for this past 70 years that I'll reference. You know, because people can see, particularly conservatives and many thinking liberals or Democrats can see how a policy like defunding the police can have such obvious problems. And so we look at cities who go through this defund the police. They want fewer police on the streets and we see crime explode. I don't know if that necessarily is karma. That is so easy to just tie one stupid idea. And this is coming from a guy that doesn't support about 50% of the work that the police do. I do believe that policing in this country needs to be massively reformed. But as far as safety and tamping down on violent crime, it's quite obvious that having very few police officers will lead to more violent crime, particularly as your economy circles the drain. It's not hard to see, so I don't know if that's really karma. That's just pure stupidity. So it's easy to see the consequences of actions that are that cut and dry, that are that obvious to everybody. But when it comes to karma, You know, when you stop and think, if people ever would, or if they would admit this to themselves, because everybody listening to the sound of my voice has been complicit in this in some way, shape, or form. Myself included, although I did disavow this and take another path about, close to 20 years ago. 20 years ago, I realized the errors of my ways. But most people are still participating in this today. You know, what we're about to live through financially, in my opinion, has been happening around the world at the hands of the United States for 70 years. And this is at the hands of the United States. Again, if you're going to label me as some kind of somebody anti-America, you need to understand there are two Americas. There is the great country that we have been given, and there is the government that runs it. And when I talk about what America has done around the world, I am saying the government that you, and at one point myself, supported and put in charge. What is done in our name? You know, American voters, so this will encompass darn near all people who voted back in the 1990s, either for H.W. Bush, the Republican, or Bill Clinton, the Democrat, Americans did not mind at all the complete encirclement of the country of Iraq. The sanctions that destroyed them economically and just happened to result in the deaths of 500,000 children, and I would I'm sure an equal number of moms and dads, brothers and sisters, 500,000 children unable to get proper nutrition, to get access to medications, because the United States decided that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, so we wanted to choke out and starve the Iraqi people in an effect to facilitate some kind of regime change. Most recently, during the Trump administration, there was great enthusiasm on the right for surrounding Iran, cutting them off, not allowing them to sell their natural resources because we didn't like their government. The government never missed a meal. The Ayatollahs, I guarantee you, have continued to live in the lap of luxury that they've always enjoyed, while the Iranian people, the coffee shops, I think I played clips a couple of years ago. There were coffee shops in Iran that were going under. They couldn't serve people. They couldn't get coffee. These were regular people in Iran just trying to open a coffee shop. The U.S. government targeted them as well. And we decided, and again, there was great enthusiasm for this on the right, and I would imagine there still is, to isolate and economically strangle the country of Iran. Now, they had never done anything to us directly. They weren't a threat to the United States in any way, but we were perfectly fine doing that. And this has been the way of the United States government for now on 70 years. You look at the countries we've invaded, and I'm going to take a break in a second, and I'll get back to the fact, do we deserve, as this bumbling idiot in the White House gets us to the brink of nuclear war? There was a story the other day that the Chinese and Russian warships, I believe they were warships, were off the coast of Alaska. Huh. Now, should that be a problem to the United States? Because we believe it's well within our right to be in international waters in the Black Sea, practicing nuclear first strikes against the Russian government, just practicing, just swinging by. Do you know that U.S. bombers routinely go down the coast of Russia? They stay just 12 and a half miles out in the water, and nuclear bombers, nuclear-capable bombers, simulate a first-strike attack on Russia. And what they do is they go out just to make the radar positions of Russia fire up so we can see where they are in case we need to actually go live and we want to take out these radar installations. So I was a little surprised that people were clutching their pearls about Russia and China being off the coast of Alaska. I don't like it, but as they say, what's good for the goose? You know, so we, as this demented creature in the White House and the people behind him running him have got us careening towards a nuclear war, do we deserve actual war on our shores? I don't want any of these things. But for everybody out there who's cast a vote for Roger Wicker, you've been very enthusiastic about imposing these kinds of costs on people around the world. The list of countries is long. Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Libya right now. You know, if we are going to go through some kind of a stock market correction where people's 401ks are going to go down a little bit, the price of your heating oil is going to go up. They're saying already 17% right now. More on that in just a little bit if I can get to it. You know, we're really whining about this. We think this is, you know, absolutely horrifically unfair. Now, libertarians have been warning you that this was coming for quite some period of time, and instead of understanding that and joining them, people like Alex Jones have decided that they are actually the problem. But as Americans whine about the higher prices, you understand we actually are our government under the Obama administration, the first black president, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, the Obama administration and the Hillary Clinton State Department went in and turned Libya into a failed state, which it still is today. This is about 12 years, I believe, of Libya being a completely failed state. And actually, they went back to open-air slave trading markets in Libya. The first black president in the history of the United States actually created a condition where black people are being sold into slavery in Libya. They weren't before our involvement in Libya and our decision to topple the Gaddafi regime. But the people in Libya have been going through untold suffering. And by untold, I mean the fact that the media is never going to tell you anything about it. But it was the U.S. government. Well, Mike, I didn't vote for that. Well, you voted for Donald Trump. The Syrian government went to the U.N. Just a couple of days ago, I believe. I guess the U.N.'s meeting. Everybody's going and making their speeches. The Syrian government went in there, and they're demanding reparations. And I'll tell you, they got a good case. They're asking for, I can't remember if it was $106 or $160 billion in reparations because the United States, after wrecking their country by sending money to radical jihadists to tear apart another sovereign country that had done nothing to us based on the fact that we said that the leader of that country, Assad, was mean to his own people. And so we unleashed a wave of radical jihadist terrorists on the country of Syria. And then as a little cherry on the top, on our way out, when we decided to get our military involvement out of there, Donald Trump left a contingent of American military in there to seize Syrian oil, depriving them of the ability to even rebuild their country from the butt-kicking they took at our hands. They're seeking this $100 billion in reparations for all of the lost revenue of the oil that Donald Trump stole from them and Joe Biden continues to steal from them. So is this karma? We have let our government, and most people listening to the sound of my voice are up to and including today participating in some way, shape, or form. You're voting for a Republican, you're voting for a Democrat, and it has been at the hands of both of these political parties. But I got to tell you, the right has pretty much led the empire for quite a period of time. Barack Obama brought the left into loving the world empire. Barack Obama, the first black president, is the one that made it cool to drone strike people of color halfway around the world. Isn't that interesting, particularly as the Nobel Peace Prize winning president? So he brought the left into the war party, but you've all supported this war party, and we have used the U.S. dollar. As we are on the cusp of what I believe to be a pretty serious financial crisis that's going to hurt hundreds of millions of Americans, we have used the U.S. dollar around the world to make people do exactly what we want. And if they went against our way, if they weren't on board with what we wanted, we cut them off the financial system. We sanctioned them. We stopped them from trading. We blockaded their country. We destroyed them. We tried to bend them to our will. The U.S. dollar, which was given this great responsibility and privilege of being the world's reserve currency, we weaponized it against country after country and have devastated country after country financially. Now, most people do not see this, just like they do not see the wars. They'd have no sympathy, no empathy. They don't really care. They're not involved. They don't see any pictures from Yemen. They don't care. I love the people that are out there in the fight to protect the unborn here in the United States, but the silence and the complete ignoring of the fact that pregnant women are being killed around the planet at the hands of the U.S. State Department, CIA, Pentagon, the deep state. This feels karmic to me. And maybe this is why great empires fall. Maybe it's just karma. You just deal out so much abuse. And again, this is not anti-American. This country could have been the greatest example in the history of the world. You want to see freedom shine. Just let a free people do their thing. We would be so prosperous. We would really be a very happy group of people, too. This is kind of at the core. This is the promise that we think as libertarians. We think if they would just leave us alone and let us live our lives and keep our own money and not bother anybody else, we could really be this fantastic experiment to show the world what freedom can do for you. And I think that that would be contagious. More people would see our example and would run to us. Instead, we've alienated them, bossed them around, and tried to absorb the entire world in our empire. And if they do not bend to our will, we take them down. Well, it's not just the U.S., it's the Western powers, really, that have been behind a lot of this. But it's been led by the U.S. government, and now Western governments are set to fall. Those in Europe are in big, 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 big trouble right now, particularly because of the energy issues. This feels kind of karmic. As I said, I don't know how this will be received as being some kind of anti-American thing. What's the prescription? You tell us the problems, Mike. You don't tell us the solutions. Quit supporting these people. I don't care what letters behind their name. I will never support Donald Trump again because he's a war criminal. It's one of the reasons I, among a million others, I would never have supported Joe Biden. Joe Biden has a long history of being a war criminal. Barack Obama is a war criminal. All modern presidents should be taken in front of The Hague and tried for crimes against humanity and executed, in my opinion. But what you're about to live through is what people around the world have been living through for about 70 years right now, led by the U.S. State Department and the U.S. government. So it just feels like maybe we're getting just a taste of our own medicine. Be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. You know, I was thinking, I mean, I don't know if that really offends people to say, are we just getting what we kind of deserve karmically here as we see, if we see a real economic crisis. I hear a lot about Democrats being the party of death. I get that point. I'm not here to argue that whatsoever. You look at their bizarre beliefs on abortion, up to and partial birth and post-birth at this point, and the crime. These labels are put on Democrats. Absolutely, I have absolutely no problems with it. But you have to understand that the way that I see it, I mean, I don't know how I come to a different conclusion. We have a government of death. And much of it is exported. When it comes to the Republican Party, are they not the merchants of death, those that are calling for endless sanctions on countries that strangle them economically? This has real-world consequences, and that's what I'm saying. We're about to feel what other countries have felt at our hands. We're going to see people die of deaths of despair in this country if we have a great financial crisis. We saw that in 2008. We saw that during the COVID lockdowns. We're going to have real people hurt very, very badly. All of their hopes and dreams of what they thought they were going to do are going to be gone. Now, I'm going to say it one more time because I want to make sure everybody understands that doesn't have to be you, and it's not going to be everybody. If this is like the Great Depression, plenty of people lived through the Depression to talk about it. It was a time where, you know, you had to tighten your belt. Things were a little hard. But they say hard times make good men. This might be a good character-building experience for us. But what I'm saying is, If we have to live through some hardship here, it is hardship that we have inflicted purposefully at the government level, not you and me, but tacitly by our voting for this system and propping up, each of us doing all we can to prop up our half of this system and cheering. You know, this always gets me in trouble. But it's really been the right that has been the most bloodthirsty worldwide for most of the time, until the past 10, 15 years, where the Democrats have come in and said they absolutely love the war machine, too. All the anti-war sides of the left are just all but extinguished now. The right has very small smatterings of some anti-war people out there. The libertarians are basically all anti-war. But this is what we've inflicted. So the hardships we see, we have to understand, this is what people around the world have been going through for 70 years now. The people of Iran were perfectly happy with their government in 1953. It was a Western-style democracy there. They had a very popular leader named Mossadegh. We couldn't let that stand, because Mossadegh wanted to keep the oil in Iran for his own people. And so the CIA and Operation Ajax decided, well, we're going to get rid of that guy and put in a guy that will make sure that Western countries can get in there and take the Iranian oil. And we subjected the Iranian people to, about 30 years? 30 years of a strongman dictator. And this led to the uprising that came with the Islamic Revolution in 1979. So for 30 years, the people of Iran were stripped of the democracy that they had, the very good quality of life. Go back and look at pictures of like 1953 Iran. There's cars running up and down the street. There's shops open. Women don't have headscarves on. I mean, it's just looks, if the skin tone was different, it'd look like maybe 1950s Paris. But the U.S. couldn't allow that to happen, because the oil interests wanted that Iranian oil. That Mossadegh, that popular leader of the Iranian people, kicked Western powers out because they've been exploiting their natural resources. They said, these are our natural resources. They're within our borders. We'd like to use them for our own people. The West couldn't have that. That was 1953. That's why I'm telling you, this has been going on for a long time. For any of you who think, well, this is just that Joe Biden's getting us into big trouble these days. He certainly is. He absolutely is. But we have exported misery out of the sight of most Americans. And I think that's probably what people might grapple with and be angry at me with, because I've been paying attention to it. Nobody else is. We're consumed with what's going on here, consumed with the political theater, consumed with our tribe and making sure we support our guy. And I'm looking at your guy and your guy, whichever side you're on, and I'm saying, do you know the misery they're exporting around the world? Well, I think we're about to get a taste of it, so we'll see. I went a little long last segment. I said, this is philosophical. I'm just talking. You might disagree with me. No, America is this shining example, this beacon, this shining city on the hill, Mike. Everything we do is right. You listen to our mainstream media. Listen to our State Department. Everything we do is right. Anybody who opposes us is wrong. That's what they say. Do you think that that's ever the case? Could that possibly be true? Of course it's not. And particularly not if you're in somebody else's border. If you're a country on the receiving end of endless American sanctions and bullying, oh my gosh. It doesn't make us safer. It hasn't made us more prosperous. I've already countless times talked about the declining middle class in this country. We've benefited from it none. Yet people will get off their couch and go vote for the same political class that has brought us here and has exported this misery around the world. It's coming home to roost now, and you should look at those people that you've supported. I don't care which side of the aisle they're on. It's about 95% of them. I made some bad votes, and Trump tricked me into participating in the system in 2016. It's like an unblemished record, you know? It's like a pitcher with a long-running no-hitter, and you let that one guy. It's like, oh, gosh, I almost had a perfect game. For the past 20 years, I almost had a perfect game of not supporting anybody who exports this misery around the world. But Trump duped me into voting for him in 2016, and now I have to accept a little bit of responsibility for the misery that he exported. His sanctions on Russia, his strangling of Iran, his stealing of the Syrian oil fields. So I've got some culpability here, too. It's just the difference between me and most people is I don't like it. I feel bad about it.
I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along. And
all right, when we come back, we'll have Stone Clanton on with Americans for Prosperity. We'll talk about what's going on in the state of Mississippi here. Maybe some concerning news. Stone just came in. He'll join me next hour. But maybe some Green New Deal stuff rolling into the state of Mississippi. Is that possible? you really think it's so good to live in a conservative state. There's some reasons to believe that. You know, it seems like our guns are fairly secure here. And there's some other things. But, boy, it does not feel like a really conservatively run state, does it? It doesn't feel like a free market place. Doesn't feel like it, you just don't anticipate that a conservative state would be so beholden on the federal government. But that's where we find ourselves. And I'm glad that we've got Americans for Prosperity to explain this stuff to me. I got to tell you, as you've noticed with this show, I focus a lot on the national, but I really need to draw my attention a little bit closer to home. That's where it actually matters. We'll be back with Stone.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Thursday. That's every Thursday. We do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour, particularly when it comes to the state of Mississippi, and we bring in a representative from Americans for Prosperity who is fighting that fight for us here locally in the state. Today we have got Stone Clanton with us. Stone, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's nice fall weather out this morning.
Every time I say your name, I almost say Stone Phillips. Isn't he? Is he the guy with NBC or something
like that? Yeah, years ago. So actually, this is kind of funny. My dad used to watch him a lot all the time, and that's how he came up with my name, actually. I usually tell people, oh, my dad was a really big wrestling fan, big Stone Cold Steve Austin fan.
Oh,
and,
I
I'd get their reaction. Sometimes I tell them, and sometimes I just leave them with that.
But well, so if I accidentally call you Stonefield, I don't know, the name's just been ingrained in my head. It's been around for so long. But anyway, glad to have you in today. I wanted to talk a little bit about y'all are involved. Americans for Prosperity is involved on the national level in a lot of different issues and state races and things like that. I am probably as brutally harsh on the Republican Party as anybody on conservative radio because I'm so disappointed with their lack of imagination in so many different ways. But I am just curious to know, as somebody who's in an organization that does pay a lot of attention to races and stuff, and somebody who absolutely is praying for a red wave, as much as I dislike the Republican Party, I want to see the Democratic Party rebuked, you know, even for anybody else. But, you know, I do want the Republicans to take over Congress. Are we really this close? I mean, what is the electoral math look like right now for the midterms?
It's literally within a hair thin margin.
Now, are
everything?
They,
I mean, every door knock. Every, and this is talking about our, for their side, but also our Americans for Prosperity Action, our PAC, every door knock and every phone call counts. I was up there serving with our PAC in Philadelphia, or on the outskirts of Philadelphia, a couple of weeks ago, and it is tough up there. I'm not going to lie.
Well, I mean, to a lot of people, particularly consumers of conservative talk radio, the Democrats are so bad right now. How can the Republicans not have a landslide? When you see the crime, you see the inflation. I mean, as unpopular as Joe Biden is, this seems like a slam dunk. And not to mention the fact that in almost every first midterm of a new president, they lose votes in the House and the Senate. How is it possible that with this backdrop and that historical reference, that Republicans do not have a sweep of everything?
That is literally the question I've been asking since this all started. And you got to have what we deem as policy champions in there because we're literally, I mean, we're risking Supreme Court nominees later on down there, other nominees and confirmations. The filibuster is a thing that we're pushing to save in the Senate.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if the
anything
party
slows them down.
Yeah, anything. If the party in power ends up being able to do away with the filibuster and they have a majority, it's going to be hyper-partisanship. And it'll be the same thing when the other party takes over.
Right, right. Yeah.
But it'll be hyper-partisanship and just a bunch of red meat crap that isn't really going to help America in any way.
Well, you say you go to Philadelphia and it's tough up there. What do you mean? I mean, are you encountering people who are... Well, I mean, the thing about the Republican Party is they're so milquetoast. I know there's some hot button issues that maybe some Democrats would look at, and you know, abortion being one, and maybe guns. I don't know how many people are really that energized about guns, but you know, the Republicans don't have anything to me that's really repellent to just a sane person. But to look at the backdrop of right now and see the inflation alone is such a big issue, and it's not entirely Biden's fault. But it did land on his watch, and presidents are always held accountable for that. I mean, we have got people out there truly suffering. You would think that even though they're wrong, you would think that they would be wanting to make a switch to address what is dramatically affecting their family every single day. What could possibly stop them
it's
from making
pride.
A change?
but
that's the thing.
I mean, that's part of it. And when I say it was tough, what I mean is I was in a very swing area, very, very purple area. And speaking of inflation, I walked up to a door one day, and the guy opened the door, and he clearly didn't want me there, and he knew what I was doing, but he didn't want me there, but he was wanting to start something.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, we're just out talking to voters about inflation and policy champions to get in there and get in there and help stop the inflation, stop the spending, unleash energy. And the dude was like, well, I don't know anybody that does like inflation. And I said, well, I know one administration that does.
Yeah, exactly.
And he didn't like that. But anyway, it's just tough right now. And you would think that people would want some change. I mean, it's normal. Like you said, it's normal that during the midterms that the president usually
so
loses.
That's like that's an incumbent momentum for the opposing party
right.
to the presidency. So that's already in play. Then you stack the rest of this stuff, a war with Russia.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know how many people have an appetite for that.
It's literally insane. We live in such a hyper-partisan world right now that it's disgusting.
It is.
And it's
destroying this country.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And I know that George Washington would be just ashamed.
Yeah, right.
Just disgusted with what he left, especially with his you know, very famous closing remarks or leaving remarks from office. And
was that what he's talking about, the two partisans?
Yeah,
two
just hyper-partisanships and party politics and just junk
that
doesn't help. And it's just gotten worse over time, and it's the worst it's ever been in our nation's history.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. Well, I don't know if this is just a if it's an abject failure of the Republican Party to pick up what seems to be just a quarter laying on the ground. I mean, you know, what are those? This just seems so easy to make the case right now. Are they that bad, or are people just that dumb? Or I don't know what it is. I am just shocked. Now, I have a theory that a lot of times the media has got to report that everything is neck and neck, because that's what spurs political spending with their stations, everywhere from local to local newspapers to national media. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, political seasons like this are just in the tens of billions of dollars for media companies. So if they come out and they say, you know, Dr. Oz is going to wipe the floor with Fetterman, there's no way he makes up the ground. Well, nobody has a incentive. At least Dr. Oz doesn't have an incentive to run a bunch of ads.
Right.
If it's just a landslide. So it seems like they always try to keep it neck and neck to do political spending. But I'm seeing these polls, and everything just keeps getting narrower and narrower.
Yeah. I don't know. Right now, especially with the Senate, every phone call, every door knock counts. We'd feel a little bit more confident about the House.
It seems like.
I feel like.
But the Senate is only one.
One.
You just got to flip one seat. The Republicans are not going to get a net one. I mean, there's 33 or 34 races taking place. And it's a third every time, isn't it? Because of their 6-year term. Yeah. So every 2 years, a third of the Senate overcharged. So out of 33 races, this Republicans can't pick up one seat. And I haven't looked at the math to say, you know, how many entrenched Democrats are running versus you know, entrenched Republicans or Republicans that are on the cusp. That always plays a piece in it. But in this backdrop, it's just unbelievable to me. Mm-hmm. I thought a red wave was assured for all of this year until the past like month.
I think everybody did.
Yeah.
I think everybody did. But, yeah. You know, we'll see what happens. Realistically, you won't know until the day after the election. I mean,
yeah.
Election day is always so crazy, and it is literally always a toss-up. It doesn't matter. It's sort of like a baseball game or even a football game. You know, literally things can just change just like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, if a team gets riled up, they can come back from 20 or something.
But you said you were outside of Philadelphia, uh-huh. So you're in Pennsylvania. Where is that Connecticut where that Fetterman guy is going up against Dr. Oz?
Pennsylvania is Dr. Oz and Fetterman.
It is there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this Fetterman character, oh my God.
I mean, dude's a socialist.
That's when I look at him, I think, and I bring this up a lot, I think of the movie Idiocracy. I mean, this guy just is, and obviously his stroke notwithstanding, I mean, he was bad before then, but since the stroke, he's almost incoherent mm-hmm. because his brain is struggling. Mm-hmm. And then the hoodies and even the WWE goatee. It's just very odd to me to think that he was the lieutenant governor and now maybe the senator from that state, that enough people in Pennsylvania will look at that guy and go, oh, yeah that's my guy. Yeah, no doubt about it. He seems great.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I mean those hot button red meat social issues is what, and it's on both sides of the aisle that's what gets people riled up, and I think most people care about in this election. So,
well,
I don't know. We'll see. I'm worried about inflation and spending,
right, you know? Which is not going to be solved by anything that happens in the midterm elections, notwithstanding. No. And I know that we come back. Do you want to talk a little bit about this commitment to America?
That sure.
The
let's
Republicans
do that.
Have run out. That what's his name, Kevin McCarthy, has ruled out. Let me just warn you. I've spent the last 3 days eviscerating the idea that these people are in earnest about that. But I have also said at the same time, there are things in there that I could get on board with. So we'll peel apart a little bit of what they are and what AFP sees in it that could be promising. So we're talking to Stone Clanton here with Americans for Prosperity. Give us a second. We'll be right back.
I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real.
All right, we are back. We're talking to Stone Clanton with Americans for Prosperity. So let's take a look real quick at this this commitment to America. Now, my first big beef is, number one, Kevin McCarthy's behind it, and I believe he's just an establishment hack. Mm. He is almost the caricature to me of kind of the slimy Republican. Lots of things he might say that I would agree with. I mean, mm-hmm. he has some things that he'll say, but he's about the system. He's about the machine. He's about working it and whipping up votes for this or for that. And he's, you know, anti-Russia and the rest of this stuff. So I just am completely unimpressed with him. And if they do not have a red wave, it's people like Kevin McCarthy that are going to be the reason. I mean, he's just a nothing to me. There's nothing imaginative about him. He's just a politician, and I think, you know, the Republicans have got a great opportunity right now to have somebody out there that seems like more of a normal person. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. He's too slick for me. He's just way too slick for me. But I did read through it. I've read a couple of other conservative outlets that have called it, you know, milquetoast this or that and platitudes and all these other things. But there's some things in it I like. My favorite thing in the whole thing, I believe it's in there, is that one of the first things they say they're going to do is defund or undo this hiring of 87,000 new IRS agents.
Uh-huh.
The problem with that is that if they do not take the Senate back, that's dead on arrival. They can't do that. And this is, I mean, I think one of the most serious issues facing our country domestically. I mean, we might be annihilated by nuclear war, but I think I'd rather die at the hands of the Russians than have to deal with the IRS.
Well, I guess you might die quicker that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Death of a thousand cuts from the IRS. So I love the idea because I think that is a true litmus test of if the Republican Party even has a pulse of liberty and freedom for its people if they do not kill that baby in the crib when it comes to hiring all these IRS agents. So anyway, but AFP has seen some things in this.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, that's one portion of it, of course, that we like. And of course, the next piece deals with inflation and spending.
Come on now.
Well, I mean, come on now. I mean,
you think they're going to do it, though? Do you think they're are there any details of so they, you know, this is Republicans talk about spending, particularly when they're in their minority and they're trying to win a midterm. Then they get into office with Donald Trump, and suddenly we have $1 trillion deficits. The Department of Education gets the biggest budgets they've ever had. The military is, air quotes here in the studio, rebuilt. You know, so the defense contractors make off like bandits. Do the Republicans, do they really tie inflation to government spending and understand that not only do you not need to spend as much money, you need to cut spending?
We're going to try to work with anybody to do right, no one to do wrong. And you know that.
Oh, yeah.
And if they're willing to work with us on inflation and spending, then we're going to try to do that because, to me, that's just the most pressing issue that's coming up.
Yeah.
And if we don't take back the Senate as far as policy champions goes, then same thing with the IRS part. It's not going to happen.
But what I'm saying is, I know what you say.
I understand.
But they say this all the time. I mean, they're going to repeal Obamacare.
I understand.
And here we are. You know, so it's just the rhetoric does not match the actions. Judge a man by his fruits, not by his platitudes, you know. So you guys have to deal with these people, and I love it.
Yeah.
You have a much better strategy that will help this country than I do, which is just to sit back here and criticize everybody. But the criticisms are warranted because the Republicans talk about spending all the time. One of my favorite things is we need to have an adult conversation about spending. I've heard this for like 4 or 6 years now. They say, you're exactly right. We've got to get this spending under control. And then they get the reins and they spend like crazy.
I understand. Yeah.
In the Commitment to America, do they make any particular recommendations or do they just say we need to reduce spending because it causes inflation?
I mean, to my knowledge, the Commitment to America is sort of like we talked about over the break, sort of like a contract with America type thing. It's a campaign.
Yeah.
It's an initiative or a policy campaign and that the Republican Party has put forward to maybe boost their chances in the midterms.
Yeah, it's marketing.
You know, it is. Yeah. But there are, like I said, I mean, the verbiage itself is good, I think, for the most part, as far as the inflation goes. Even some of the healthcare stuff, and then mentioning the COVID-19 lockdowns and getting away from that top-down approach. You know, we always talk about the personal option, and I believe that, you know, some of that stuff can be initiated through that part of it.
Yeah.
Whether it be the telehealth stuff or direct primary
care. Well, what do they say about healthcare? I mean, is there any attempt for, you know, again, I know I'm almost being combative with
you. Yeah, I
know you can
Mike.
Feel this, and I love AFP. This is the same party that gave us Medicare Part D, and I did a little quick back of the envelope math on air the other day. That's cost us over the past 15 years probably over $1 trillion. This is Medicare Part D, which basically they just shifted the cost of pharmaceuticals from old people to the pharmaceutical companies, assuring them over $1 trillion in profits over the last 15 years. It's so hard for me to listen to them talk about spending when they do those kinds of things. And nobody talks about it except for me, so they've gotten away with it, you know. So
I understand. You know. I understand. And I guess the other piece, I mean, we've seen the violent crime piece in America rise, and there's no doubt. And violent bad people that are going to hurt people and take their stuff, need to be put in jail.
Yes,
that's who deserves to be in jail.
And not, this is the,
but
seems a red wave in the making that, right there.
It does, and of course we want to see more criminal justice reform later down the road for nonviolent. Just when I say nonviolent offenders, I mean people that are not taking people's stuff.
Right.
And hurting them physically or financially.
Crimes.
Yeah, victimless crimes. I'm a believer in doing away with quote-unquote victimless crimes. And then, of course, the immigration piece they talk about.
Why, do we have an immigration problem? Oh, yeah, that's right. I heard that 50 people made it up to Martha's Vineyard. I think that's the only problem we have in the country.
Yeah.
The borders are totally secure, but these 50 people snuck into Martha's Vineyard, apparently, because there was a big dust-up about that.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we believe in a fiscal barrier and that would help the problem, but that's not solving the broken immigration system, right? Because we do have a broken immigration system. Immigration is a great thing for the country. It's always been, we're immigrants from our ancestors, at least. But we have a welfare state. We live in a nanny state where that encourages the illegal portion of it, and then eventually sucks people in, and it's hard to get out of that. It's literally a ghetto mindset of people. Once you get on welfare, it's hard to get out, and the government entraps you in that.
Yes.
And it's the government's fault.
It is.
It's nobody else's fault but the government's fault. And we hope to see that this commitment to America can evolve a little bit with fixing the immigration problem.
Yeah. But, well, and they need to fix it. You know, you can build a wall, and I agree with you. I think that would help. It's not going to solve the problem, but I always compare it to moths on your porch, you know, and maybe that's denigrating to people that are sneaking across the border. I don't mean it to be, but the bottom line is, you know, you can go out there and try to, you know, shoo off the moths or screen in your porch, or you could just turn off the light. And, you know, our welfare system and all of the public benefits are basically this light that just keeps attracting people to come here. And they're coming from countries that are, you know, that are violent. A lot of times because of policies the United States imposes. I mean, I think the drug war has just turned Mexico into
That's another piece of it. We have the drug war itself, and then you get you entangled with the drug trafficking, and that is also human trafficking, too, which is a violent crime issue technically because, I mean, they're hurting people through that. But
see, that's part of my problem with the Republican Party is, you know, I'm against the 2 million people just traipsing across the border. But let's not create the conditions to create 2 million people that need to flee for their lives.
Exactly.
And most of what they are fleeing, some of it's dictatorship and political oppression in Central American countries. There are some bad people down there. But a lot of it is these cartels, the real violence these people live in. Those cartels do not exist without the war on drugs in the United States. I mean, we've created this situation through prohibition that's created these giant cartels, which scare the crap out of people, and they flood across our borders. Republicans say they want to stop them at the border, but they're still going to be living in these conditions that they will be seeking to escape.
Right.
So they'll go around the wall, they'll build submarines, or they'll get – I've said, you know, if Trump ever got his wall, I was going to go into the catapult business, because I know they're going to find a way over, you know, over, through, or under. So, anyway, so Republicans, I wish that they would see both sides of that and say, let's put up a wall, but let's also do things that maybe improve their life in Mexico.
Yeah. Or even, I mean, when immigrants get here and enjoy the freedoms that America offers, let's not keep them, let's not basically ingrain in somebody's head that, oh, look, the government's good. You know, we can give you these things and get them entrapped in that. And I think that comes in the welfare piece. But the drug cartels are a big portion of it.
It's interesting because it seems to me, everything that I read, Hispanics are really tilting towards Republicans. I mean, Trump got bigger votes from Hispanic groups than ever before for a Republican. And I'm just seeing a lot of polls where they realize, I mean,
look,
you don't have to speak the language to watch a Joe Biden speech and realize that you do not want this guy.
Well, look, Starla will tell you that, I mean, with her living in Florida all those years, she had a lot more experience with Hispanic and Latino communities. And they're extremely culturally conservative.
Yeah.
And they flee
like Catholics.
Yeah, I mean, and they flee and a lot of times the immigrants flee these countries that don't have good democracy, and they see, certain words and stuff, and they associate that with democracy. It appears that way. I've seen polling that appears that way.
Yeah,
as far as them leaning to the right more.
All right. So, what else in Commitment to America? Anything else that AFP is kind of hoping to flesh out?
That was pretty much our main pieces. Was the economic side of the healthcare side, and then, of course, we want to see more of the immigration and criminal justice reform fleshed out.
Is there anything in Commitment America they can do by just taking over the House, or is it just? I mean,
you gotta have both houses to pass something.
Yeah,
and I mean, you eventually have to have the president to sign off on it. But,
right.
I mean, so I don't know. We'll see.
Well, boy, like of all the elections I've ever had in my life, you know, everyone says this is the most important election of all times. And I've always thought that was really a platitude, but it's kind of like every election cycle, things for a lot of people get a lot worse. So it does become more and more important. But this one just seems like such a layup, absolute layup, that if the Republicans whiff on this one, there is something dramatically wrong.
Yeah.
All right, we're talking to Stone Clanton, America's Prosperity. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back and start taking a look within the borders of Mississippi. Stay with us.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, this is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're talking, as we normally do on Thursday, to a representative of Americans for Prosperity that's fighting for freedom, particularly economic freedom, here in the state of Mississippi, and we've got Stone Clanton in with us. So, Stone, well, you're telling me about some stuff. You want to talk about something I have do not have my eye on the ball of, is this what's going on with our energy, some energy policy here in the state of Mississippi. So tell everybody who, I guarantee you nobody knows this stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't know it. I don't think anybody knew it.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a thing that I don't know if there was something else going on, because I don't know the exact date that they voted on, that the Public Service Commission voted on this, but it was just kind of a thing that nobody it wasn't brought up. So the Mississippi Public Service Commission approved amendments to the former net metering and interconnection rules. The rules include policies to increase solar adoption across the board, enhance grid reliability, and encourage economic development, in addition to improving rooftop solar access for low-income households. And net metering, and you might know, or you insinuated that you might know a little bit more about net metering than I did.
My understanding of net metering is essentially, you know, you use a certain amount in your house, but if you have excess from your solar panels, you can actually sell it back to the grid. So it's the difference between what you use and what you sold back. That's my understanding.
Yeah,
it's been a while since I looked
at
that.
And when you say you sell it back to the grid, basically what that means is the public grid that's going on. And to my knowledge, I can't speak for Americans for Prosperity on this, because I don't know much about – I've never had to deal with this kind of policy before. And I don't know if Americans for Prosperity has even released a statement on net metering or not. But yet, to my knowledge, it doesn't sound necessarily bad. I'm not anti-solar panels. I think it's a great thing. Look at Thomas Massey. The dude lives off the grid. If I ever do that, I'll do that and just collect rainwater while I'm at it. Get a goat for
absolutely.
For goat milk and cheese.
I mean, that's but, the thing about all these things is that wouldn't it be fantastic? I would love to have a solar roof on my car, and that's how my car gets around. I'm not opposed to any of these technologies.
Yeah.
It's the forcing of them and then the subsidizing.
Exactly.
Of where we
get, it's the Green New Deal part of
it. Net metering is a billing mechanism that credits solar energy system owners for the electricity they add to the grid. So that's what I'm talking about. You can actually sell it back. Now, in some states, they sold people on solar in these states for that reason, saying, you know, not only are you going to save this much on your bill each month by installing solar, but you will be able to sell it back to the grid and get this kind of money, you know, from the state. And then they bait and switched them. This is in the past few weeks. I think it was California. I can't remember the state exactly, but, and I know this has happened a few times, they stopped accepting solar people's sell back to the state. So all these people who spent $20,000, $30,000 on outfitting them solar, and the calculation was based on their ability to sell back into the grid, they cut that off and they said, nah, we don't need your electricity anymore. And now they're just stuck like Chuck. There's no, you know, you can't sell the electricity to your
well,
neighbor.
And I don't know if that's going to happen with these solar panels, because I haven't read the minutes or whatever that the Public Service Commission put out. But yeah, the thing is, though, it's all about solar panels this time, but they're subsidizing those solar panels. But there's going to be a mass number of Mississippians that don't do that. My grandparents aren't going to install solar panels on their roof.
It's expensive.
It is expensive. But also, people aren't going to really know about it unless they might advertise and use state tax dollars to do that. But
when I pulled this up to look at what net metering is, the first thing that pops up is an ad for Mississippi Clean Energy No Cost Solar
Program. Oh, well,
there
you go. Yep. There you go.
Yep.
So, and look, as more of the people, well, let's say this, once it starts, as more of these net metering folks come on board with the plan to do that, there are also going to be additional cost in the form of the avoided cost of energy that's going to fall back on the people that didn't get the solar panels.
Wait, what do you mean the avoided cost? You mean because they didn't spend that much money on power that they've got to get the money from other people who
basically because it's a public grid.
It's going to raise rates.
It's going to raise rates on everybody.
Yeah.
And this is during inflation.
Yeah.
This is during upcoming winter where people are going to be using their central heaters more.
Yeah.
This during the holidays when people are trying to spend money on little Johnny to get him a rocking horse. But this is literal crazy. Plus, you got Thanksgiving and all this stuff coming up where you have to do big meals and stuff.
Yeah.
And this is Mississippi doing it. This is conservative Mississippi going after Green New Deal, AOC-style stuff.
Now, we were talking about the Public Energy, the Public Utility Commission. Am I saying that?
The Public Service Commission. It's under the Public Utilities staff. I know it's kind of confusing. But
this is run by people who are on board with bringing some of this Green New Deal and stuff here. Is there more stuff? I mean,
that's the only thing that I know of. Yeah. And like I said, this was, and as our Deputy Director, Kate Yates, put it, we're a day late and a dollar short on it, unfortunately, and that's on everybody. I know that Secretary Watson come out against it, the Southern Public Service Commissioner Dane Maxwell come out against it, and it's just really ugly. I don't understand why Mississippians would buy into that, or why the elected officials would do that. But I don't know. It's not good.
Yeah,
it's not good. And you had a lot of people come in, and of course it ties back to energy equity. I don't even know what that really is, but
electricity is well known historically to be racist.
You had a lot of people come in. The Sierra Club was there. The ACLU was there, and a lot of progressive groups. And I'm not. I love Earth.
Yeah.
I want to take care of Mother Earth.
Yeah, I'm pretty
but
fond of
you know,
the
I
air.
Live here.
Yeah.
But once you start subsidizing it and convincing people to do that, basically paying them taxpayer dollars, that's just wrong. You're stealing from other people to do that. And you're not. It's sort of like people say there ought to be a law. Well, that isn't always the case because a law can change a lot of stuff, but it can't change a person's heart. So the people are just buying into it, and the other people are just like, you know what, I don't want to have nothing to do with that. So they're definitely not on board with saving the planet. I don't know.
It's just like electric cars. I mean, you can free market this thing.
Exactly.
I mean, everything, it used to cost $5,000 for a flat screen TV. I remember when they came out, and so one of your friends would get a plasma TV.
Oh my gosh.
When they were like $2,000, and people would be like, oh my gosh, we're all watching the Super Bowl over here. Well, they didn't force everybody to get a plasma TV because of some energy savings or anything like that. The market just went, oh, this is popular. People like this. We're going to continue to find ways to manufacture them. The more we sell, the cheaper the parts get. And look at now you can go to Walmart and get a 55-inch TV for $210 or something like that. I mean, and so the same thing would happen eventually with electric cars, and the same thing would happen eventually with solar panels. I mean, these things left to the free market, I think a lot of people would voluntarily switch to solar.
For
you
sure.
And I will go off the grid. I'd love to be off the grid. Who wants to pay energy, and who wants to be tied to, particularly with all these new smart meters where they're starting to cut off people from air conditioning?
And innovation is a great thing. It's what's built America. I mean, look at what the Wright brothers did. Look at what Henry Ford did. All these other people that invented different things, and things change. I mean, like I said, with the Henry Ford thing, people didn't say, oh, my God, what about the horse industry?
Right, what I'm saying? Right. Yeah.
So it's just, I don't know. But the thing is, you just can't subsidize it. That's wrong. It's big government corruption, cronyism.
It's
cronyism.
Yeah.
But
I wonder who the big
good.
Beneficiaries here in Mississippi, people that might line the coffers of anybody campaigning off this or making this policy go. I mean, are there solar installers that are
I'm sure they're jumping
to cash
for joy
in on this, and all
I'm sure they're jumping for
like
joy.
That. Yeah, I would like to see the math on solar these days. I my understanding is, the time it takes at a home to recoup the investment in solar for the average house. Last time I looked, it was something like 12 to 15 years. Most people don't even stay in their homes that long anymore. So it's a long-term calculus. The cost of solar to make it viable has just got to come down.
Yeah.
And I would imagine there's a whole bunch of government regulations in the manufacture, shipping, and everything else of solar panels that is keeping, part of keeping the price high. But also, they're just not mass done yet. So,
yeah.
It's going to be interesting. All right, we got to take one more break. We're talking to Stone Clanton with Americans for Prosperity. We'll finish up. They got an event coming up. We want to talk about everything and every way you can get involved with their organization, so stick around. We'll be right back.
All over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment here on the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, as we talk to Stone Clanton from AFP. So, Stone, what have you guys got going on as far as ways people can get involved with you? Let's hit that real quick.
Yeah, we got some good stuff coming up in the Jackson area on October 11th. At 6 p.m. at our Ridgeland office. We're going to be hosting another Torchbearer meeting, and this one is going to be on a class called Becoming a Watchdog. It's going to be all about how to identify government corruption, cronyism, and what to do when you see it.
Yeah. So these are full-time positions.
it could be argued.
Yeah, theoretically,
it could be argued.
Yeah.
So think somebody like Auditor White, who's always putting somebody in jail for embezzlement or something. That's
right.
What we want to teach people, how to spot people like that, to report people like that.
If we could redirect the energy of the Karens in our society away from masks and slightly overcooked steaks, and take that fury that they have and force that energy towards corruption.
People.
Yeah, we might
solve it. It might work.
Karens.
Male and female Karens.
Right, absolutely.
But, so that one's going to be coming up. We'll have dinner there and time to socialize and do that kind of stuff. So October 11th at our original office. Then October 29th, we're going to have another National Day of Action. We're helping out our friends at America for Prosperity Action, making phone calls from 4 to 6 p.m., but immediately following that at 6 p.m., we're going to be having a fall social called Fall for Freedom. So we'd love for people to come in for some hot apple cider or a stew.
When is that?
October 29th at 6 p.m.
So that's right before the midterms then, so that's kind of final push stuff. I got to tell you, I work so much when y'all do these things, and I have made one of these phone banks, but I really want to do that because I want to hear what people are saying out there. I mean, it's just, I'm a student of the human mind. And as I say, how I can't believe a red wave is not coming with the mess we have right now. I'd kind of like to hear from people how it's possible that they could continue the track we're on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that one's going to be fun. The fall social will be good. Bring the whole family, come out. It's going to be a good place to network with people as well.
Yeah, meet great
on different issues.
Sure.
There's going to be all types of people there. So that'll be fun. So that first event's on October 11th, the second one, October 29th, both of them at 6 p.m. But that October 29th one, if y'all want to come out and help our friends at AFP Action at 4 o'clock, we'd love that. You can get in contact with me at 601-300-9536, and then we're on Instagram at AFP Mississippi, on Facebook at AFP Mississippi.
Yeah, okay. So y'all are also gearing up for, I guess, the legislature. Is that now kind of Cade's thing now? He's kind of taking charge.
He and Starla are doing that, and Cade is really taking the reins on doing a lot of our lobbying, and he's doing a really good job at doing that today. Today we're actually meeting to talk about some education policy later at the office to see what we can do. I also want to give a shout-out to Nathan Moore. He's a new grassroots engagement director up in North Mississippi. He lives in Oxford, will be doing work in Oxford, Starkville, Tupelo, DeSoto County area. So if y'all know anybody up there that would like to get involved, you can either reach out to me and I can get y'all in touch with him or whatever.
DeSoto County, that's some ripe ground for y'all.
Oh,
yeah. Like DeSoto County is where all the freedom fighters in Mississippi are based.
It appears that way, don't it?
Yeah. There's a lot of people up there. Something's in the water. We need to – it's not the same stuff that's in the Jackson water, apparently. When you're looking at the legislature, is there anything that's kind of glaringly good or bad that kind of gearing up to?
It's election year coming up.
So doesn't that usually make for a tamer year, kind of like nobody wants to do anything bold? They're just trying to muddle through to get reelected?
I think it can be a good or bad thing. One good thing, I guess there's two good things and two bad things that could happen, or two good things and one bad thing. Two good things is, number one, they just might not do nothing, which will be beneficial to us all if they just stop doing things. Number two, they could push forth a lot of good policy that we like, but the bad side of that is they're trying to please everybody.
Right, exactly.
Possibly.
And
they might push forth bad policy and good policy. So they're just trying to please everybody to get reelected.
So we're every 4 years on an off election year is how the Mississippi legislature is.
So we and Louisiana, I think, are the only states that do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're side by side.
It seems like that might kind of be good for if the citizenry really got involved and wanted to hold people accountable, because when you don't have national elections, you can really focus in on exactly what the state people are doing and really put your energy into trying to fix your state in a time where you're not distracted by president and the House and the Senate and all that stuff.
I think it's a great thing.
But it also probably crushes voter turnout because people aren't as engaged when there aren't national elections. There's some reason that they do that, and I'm sure it's to their advantage, but I'm trying to think how we can flip it on its head and say, you know, cause that'll be the first year that, you know, that I've known y'all well, and y'all have done such a good job for me in explaining the Mississippi legislature and really kind of making me understand more what goes on here. And it's really kind of sad, you know, that
well, like
we
I
have
said,
this majority
like
red
Like I said,
state.
The less we do, the better.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
But I don't know. We'll see. I think we're going to be pushing for good policy, educational policy, a lot of school choice, educational freedom stuff. We can play whack-a-mole with a curriculum, you know, but on the other end, we could let parents choose the entire curriculum by school choice. And then we could also, we're going to be trying to tackle some regulatory stuff. We met with Commissioner Gibson a little while ago to talk about some regulatory sandbox stuff that's going to be good to open up innovation here in the state, especially ag tech. And then, among other things, home-based businesses will be pushing for that and allowing people to open up businesses in their homes if they're doing it safely.
Right.
A lot of times cities just want property taxes, make them get a commercial property. But that's just a few of the many things that we're going to be tackling over the next year.
Is there going to be anything further done in this legislature to take the momentum of the tax cuts of last year and try to push them any further? Or is that already set on its path of the gradual decline?
If I had to guess, I wouldn't think so. I think it's going
to It's already set on a path to where it eventually sunsets, right? So it's kind of a...
Well, yeah, it'll get to a flat tax. And I think now, I mean, maybe somebody next year tries to do that. I wouldn't show any optimism for that, though, to try to push it a little bit further. But I would, right now, I'd see that's what they did, and they're proud of it. And, and I'm proud to have that without a tax increase elsewhere, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, maybe down the line when it becomes that flat tax, maybe we can, because we want a full elimination.
Yep. All right. That's our time with AFP. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.